Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. We begin our show with a doctor who doesn't want to see you. He doesn't want you as his patient. Why? As a medical oncologist and palliative care specialist, every day he sees people fighting for their lives. He believes there are steps we could and should be taking to live longer and live well. And he's come up with a list of commandments he wants us all to follow so that you won't be his patient.
That doctor is cancer and palliative care specialist Dr. Edward Cragen, an oncologist at the Mayo Clinic. He's written a book that's a primer for living long and living well. It's titled, How Not to Be My Patient, A Physician's Secret for Staying Healthy and Surviving Any Diagnosis.
Dr. Cragen, we appreciate your time here on Take Care.
Good morning. What a privilege. Thank you.
So, you have a list of commandments for living long and living well, and of course, as might be expected, diet and exercise are on that list. Let's start with that, because both are scientifically proven to improve quality of life, but, you know, not everybody is still on board with doing the work that we need to do in terms of exercise and eating in the best possible way. So based on your research and your years of clinical practice, you recommend a plant-based diet for longevity and good health.
Yes.
Why plant-based?
The evidence is overwhelming and compelling that a plant-based diet enhances quality of life and enhances length of life under the umbrella of all sorts of diagnoses, whether it's cardiovascular disease, cancer, or Alzheimer's type dementia. And for many of our readers, I think a key ingredient to well-being is information. So mayoclinic.org and our book, How Not to Be My Patient, really provide the reader's digest of what's necessary. So the plant-based diet, or the Mediterranean diet, is based upon green leafy vegetables, colored fruits and vegetables, legumes, with a decrease in processed foods, such as certain sugars, and with a focus on protein from plant-based structures. And in fact, the studies that prove the value of this were interrupted because the initial preliminary results were so overwhelmingly positive. So our diet can kill us or provide meaningful life.
So you are not of the thought that eating a lot of animal fat and other fats in general that is so popular right now is the way to go?
The evidence right now from almost every credible medical journal is that the plant-based program, decreasing fats from animal origin, really decreases the risk of cardiovascular disease and enhances sense of well-being. Now, a modification of the Mediterranean diet is called the MIND diet, M-I-N-D, and this has been proven to decrease the risk of Alzheimer's disease or to slow the progression of that nightmare, which is affecting many of our listeners.
Let's move on to exercise. I know you talk about being a marathon runner in your book, but let's face it, most of us are not running marathons. So just for your average person, you have a very interesting phrase that you use, that your measurement of eating sensibly is personalized based on an individual's height, heredity, and lifestyle. What do you mean by that?
By that I mean much of my workday is relatively sedentary. When I'm in the hospital, I'm obviously walking a number of miles, but a lot of the time is sitting at a desk. So the number of calories that I need, which might be 1,800 to 2,000, would be clearly inadequate for an individual doing hard, vigorous physical work. So I think it's crucial that our listeners invest in one or two consultations with a registered dietitian. You know, most of us would be foolish to do our own taxes or our own financial planning. And likewise, most of us spend more research buying a car than getting professional input. So I think a professional is crucial so that we don't mislead ourselves about an appropriate diet.
And when you say heredity, Do you mean like look around at your family members in your immediate family, and if they have weight issues that you have to consider that there is a genetic component to maybe struggles you have with weight and therefore you have to exercise more? Is that what you mean by heredity?
Yes, and without question, our genes are not our destiny. Let me give you an example. My parents struggled with alcoholism. I am an only child. I'm not a geneticist, but it's not brain surgery to anticipate that I've inherited the genes for alcoholism. So I made a conscious decision based upon information that alcohol would never be a part of my life. So if our listeners are in a genetic environment where weight has been an issue, one needs to be mindful and aware of the importance of an appropriate diet, the Mediterranean diet, in combination with physical activity.
You mentioned alcohol, and we're definitely going to get to that, but I just want to jump back to one of the three things that you mentioned, and you say lifestyle, and of course sitting at a desk is one thing. I was struck by, I raised a family in the suburbs, as many of us do, and yes. I had a daughter who went to college in a city, and for her, was college in Chicago, and it was typical for somebody to walk half a mile to catch the elevated trains, to ride to anywhere in the city. And when you live in the suburbs, you walk to the garage and you get in the car. Mm-hmm. So how, you know, I think about that because obviously that changed how she approached things. And when we're always looking to exercise and we see exercise as going to the gym, but of course getting in that car and driving to the gym, it is very easy to make excuses. Whereas if we do modify our lifestyle, we move somewhere where we're using a lot more public transportation or we're walking. Is that a practical way of considering changes to lifestyle? I mean, if you look at European cities, many, many people walk, and that's not a habit here in the United States.
Without question, we can modify our lifestyle for exercise. For example, I tell many of our patients, take the stairs. Park your car several blocks away from where you work. If you have 45 minutes at lunch, bring your own lunch. Don't stand in a cafeteria line. Eat your lunch respectively. Turn off the computer. Don't check email. Don't check Facebook. And spend 20 minutes simply walking. So if we commit ourselves, we can make a difference. Now, Peter Drucker was a business consultant who said, the best way to predict the future is to create the future. And with meaningful engagement, we can create a future of health and well-being, or this will not have a happy ending. The buck really stops with us.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And our guest today is Dr. Edward Cragin. He is the author of the book, How Not to Be My Patient, which really includes so many things, and we're trying to get the top wisdom synthesized here by Dr. Cragin. He is a cancer and palliative care specialist at the Mayo Clinic and an oncologist. Thank you so much for joining us. I just want to get back to this lifestyle and exercise. Before we move off the exercise piece of our talk with you today, based on medical science and studies, what do you recommend to your patients, your listeners, and your readers as the minimum amount of weekly exercise a person should get to remain healthy?
For the typical generic off-the-shelf person who's basically healthy, the usual recommendation for most professional organizations is 30 minutes of aerobic activity on most days of the week. Now, this can be walking, treadmill, Stairmaster, elliptic glider, swimming, but 30 minutes. Now, that also includes mowing the grass, gardening, dancing. It also includes vacuuming. We need to do something to increase that pulse rate and perhaps gives us a mild sweat. Now, if one is ill, one of the best-kept secrets in medicine that most of us never think about is physical therapy. Every patient, regardless of their situation, can benefit from a visit with a physiatrist, that's a physical medicine physician or a physical therapist, because we lose muscle mass, strength, and tone when we're sick. When we're in the hospital, we become weak as kittens. So an investment with a physical therapist is crucial. It's also reasonable to make an investment with a personal trainer. One or two sessions can open up a world of possibilities when we're basically fit. Because if we don't invest in ourselves, no one else will.
We talked earlier about alcohol, so we said we'd get back to it, and here we go in depth. Obviously, everybody's looking for that study that says, oh, have a little bit at the end of the day. It'll relax you. It'll take the pressure off. But obviously, there are studies that show that alcohol consumption is harmful, even in very controlled amounts. What do you have to say about alcohol consumption?
This really is an individual, almost spiritual, existential conversation. If one gets online and looks at, obviously, honorable organizations such as the American Heart Association or MayoClinic.org, and we touch on this in our book, the usual recommendation is one drink for a woman per day and two drinks per day for a gentleman, and this is usually defined as several ounces of wine. However, one recognizes that chemical dependency and related disorders have reached unbelievable levels of suffering. So one needs to be discreet. For example, me, with a strong family history of alcoholism, I simply would not drink alcohol under any circumstances. So as with all things in life, like putting on your seatbelt, it's a question of risks and benefits. So if one does not have a history of alcohol-related disorders, those guidelines are very, very appropriate.
In your book, you talk quite a bit about the importance of forming stable, long-term relationships. How do those connections influence health and wellness?
Without question, I can go to the bedside and see two patients with the same diagnosis, let's say advanced cancer of the lung. Their CAT scans look the same. Their pathology reports look the same, and I can predict which patient would do well. If a patient is isolated, disenfranchised, marginalized, without a circle of support and love and affection, it would be extraordinarily unlikely that that patient would do well. But the other patient with a similar biology has the daughters who flew in. The son is at the bedside. That faithful partner is with the patient 24/7. That patient has an enormous advantage. Now, let me backtrack for a minute. Harvard Medical School has produced a fascinating alumni study of graduates from Harvard going back to the 1930s. And the most significant factor in survival, the most significant factor in the long life, was relationships and joy. So money, boat, the big car, the country club membership were just distractions. It was the power of the relationships that drove well-being for these Harvard graduates. Loneliness kills us.
And you also mentioned meaning and purpose in life outside of our connections, but that also was something that helped push some of these patients through adversity.
Without question, meaning and purpose is the fuel, it's the catalyst that keeps us going. In the Japanese culture, there's a term called, and our listeners can help me with this, ikigai. It's ikigai. This means meaning and purpose and engagement. And we've all known the stories of the executive, the assembly line worker who retires at age 65, and the joke, which is not funny, you get a gold watch, you get a free bone scan, you get a heart attack, and you're dead in 2 years. So meaning and purpose is absolutely crucial. Society says you're obsolete when you're 65, and my rebuttal is prove them wrong. Get so good that they can't ignore you. Meaning and purpose is the catalyst on the garden of health and well-being.
Dr. Edward Cragen, thank you so much for joining us on Take Care. Dr. Cragen's book is How Not to Be My Patient. We just scratched the surface with some great advice. Dr. Cragen is an oncologist and a palliative care specialist at the Mayo Clinic. Thank you again.
Thank you.